Hello, and welcome to the third of three exciting NABBW teleseminars that we're hosting this month. In a moment, I will introduce our guest, Tina Turbin, who will be speaking on one of her urgent missions in life, increasing awareness of celiac disease in baby boomers. But first, let me introduce myself and set the stage. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com. And we also have another site, which is a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, you are welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW site, which you can use to join. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have recordings of approximately 70 past teleseminars, which are yours with membership in the NABBW. You won't find them on the site unless you're a member, however, as we keep them in the members-only area. Now, as I said, this is the third of three teleseminars that we're hosting this month, so just a quick word on our upcoming events for the month of October. We'll have three new NABBW teleseminars again next month. The dates are October 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, where we'll be talking with Lynn Tolson on domestic violence. October 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Dr. Dori Lynn, celebrity psychologist and sexpert, who will be discussing her newest book, Sex for Grown-Ups, Dr. Dori Reveals the Truth, Lies, and Must-Tries for Great Sex After 50. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern on October 21st. And finally, on October 28th, we go back to the 7 p.m. Eastern time period, and we'll be talking with Mary Beth Izard, author of the book Boomerpreneurs, on her topic, How Baby Boomers Can Start Their Own Businesses, Make Money, and Enjoy Life. She'll be sharing tons of helpful information on this call. I do hope that you think these calls, which are all free teleseminars, are on exciting and interesting topics, and that you'll sign up for those calls as well. Now, as to the format of the call today, please get yourself comfortable and make sure that in addition to having something to drink, you have paper and pencil to take notes, as the topics we're going to cover are fascinating and very important, and I know you'll want to have notes afterward. In a moment, I will give you some background on today's guest, Tina Turbin, and then she and I will spend about 30 minutes discussing celiac disease, what it is, common symptoms, and what impact it has on you. Now, without further delay, let me introduce today's guest, and then we'll get started. Tina Turbin has become extremely interested and involved in the subjects of celiac disease, gluten sensitivity, and gluten issues a number of years ago after being diagnosed as a celiac after many years of unresolved troubles. Since then, she has engaged in diligent research and writing about these topics. She does weekly radio shows, developing gluten-free recipes, and reviewing company products for celiac consumer safety. She has a website where you can learn about all of this work that she's doing at glutenfreehelp.info. That's glutenfree, glutenfreehelp.info. Tina is an award-winning children's book author. You might know her for her Danny the Dragon series, which you can find out more about at dannythedragon.com. And she donates her children's audio book profits to Dr. Peter Green's Celiac Disease Center at Columbia University Medical Center. To stay updated on her projects, please sign up for her newsletter by visiting www.tinaturbin.com. That's TINATURBIN.com. Tina resides in both her East and West Coast studios and kitchens, continuing her writing, promoting, and working within the celiac and gluten-free arena, and always writing more children's books to entertain the world. Welcome to the call, everyone. Tina, before I launch into my questions, why don't I give you a brief opportunity to say something about what led you to your interest in celiac disease?
Oh, thank you. I would love to share that as an introduction. I am a mother of three, And my children were, I would say, the youngest one was still in her teens. The oldest one was in his late teens. And I started having, I had always had a little bit of, you know, occasional discomfort, digestion here and there. You know, as a kid, I don't think I really noticed it as much. Mm-hmm. But as I was getting older, I started noticing, you know, maybe like, oh, you know, maybe I should learn about enzymes. Maybe this, you know, just occasionally. But something escalated to the point that I really didn't pay much attention to what was going on with my digestive system, because I was starting to get achy joints, debilitating pain up and down my spine, my extremities. I was getting headaches. My periods were odd, and I was not near menopause at that point. And I went in and out of doctor's appointments, ultrasound, blood tests, to be told, well, maybe you have ulcers. Well, I should have had an H. pylori test. It should have been positive, but it was negative. But they said, well, take this medicine anyway. This is for ulcers. I said, but I don't have ulcers. You know, and it was just, I was at my wit's end. I was with the kids and with my husband, and I just said, I've got to put my health in my own hands, because I'm not getting this resolved. It was sort of like there was never two steps forward, any steps backwards. It was just I would get a little bit of relief maybe for a day or two, but I still always had the pain. Now, by this point, it was in my intestines, in my digestion, burning, and I just, all I was eating, all I wanted to eat was oil and bread. I wanted to take the bread and put it in the oil to sort of coat my stomach. That was my idea.
Okay.
Little did I know what I was doing to myself. So eventually, I basically diagnosed myself, figured this out, presented it to the doctor, had the blood test, and within 2 weeks, I was diagnosed positive with celiac disease, which at that point I found out it was a genetic disorder. Somebody else in my family had it, and since then, two of my three children are diagnosed now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's an impressive
story. And it took me 7.5 years.
Well, I know that I had never heard of it, and I think of myself as a my grandfather was an MD, so I grew up in a family where we talked about medical things a lot on the dining room table. You know, it was just not because we were sick, but it was just fascinating topics to me. But I never heard anything about celiac disease until somewhere in my mid-20s when one of my neighbors was diagnosed with it. And I remember that she went through terrible, terrible situations, very similar, of course, to what you're talking about, before she was diagnosed. But I'm thinking that perhaps some of our listeners might not really know what celiac disease is. So is there some way that you could give us a simple explanation of what it is before I launch into more of the many questions that I have for you?
Yes, and I will explain this simply, and I think that it's important that through the remainder of the questions and answers that we're discussing that we do keep it simple, because that's the only way this can get understood, and that's the purpose of what I do, is to impart the data in a way that it can be understood, so if it is right for you or if it helps a neighbor, a family member, it's something you can then go and research. You don't need to know all the technical terms, because it really isn't going to do you a bit of good at this point, or any of us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so to answer your question, let's discuss what celiac disease is. First of all, you need to understand what an autoimmune disease is, because celiac disease is an autoimmune disease. And in the simplest of terms, an autoimmune disease is your body sort of has its wires crossed and it starts attacking itself. It's like multiple sclerosis. And it's the body is attacking itself. It does, you know, that's basically an autoimmune disease. And in celiac disease, the body starts attacking an area of the small intestine. It starts attacking the villi, and the villi are these little, it's kind of like if you could look at a paper towel tube as your small intestine, and on the inside of that paper towel tube, you have little combs, little hair-like projections sticking out. And at the end of those little projections, the tips of them is where your nutrients go through, and that's where the very tips of them, it's almost like, and I'm saying this in a very simple terms, your nutrients go down to the tips through that little comb into your bloodstream, and that's how you get your nutrition.
You acquire your nutrition, okay.
Exactly. So if your villi are damaged, or if the ends of them are are blunted or if you have no villi, you cannot absorb your nutrients. When you are celiac and you have this autoimmune disease, your body starts attacking that villi to a greater or lesser degree. And you can have symptoms or not in the intestines. You can have symptoms or not, and that's very important for anybody who's listening to understand that.
Wow, that is, have symptoms or not, that's very significant.
Yes, you can have also no digestive symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have headache.
Are there some common symptoms that people might get?
Well, if you have these symptoms, if you have the symptoms, you can have, it's either weight loss or weight gain because you could be trying to, you know, eat and get your nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
You can have nutritional deficiencies, depression, like I said, achy joints. Very often people will have, as far as a symptom that you can see, is in your stool you'll see sort of like fat, or you'll have very large stools compared to most people.
Mm-hmm.
Exhaustion, irritability, and there's a lot of menstrual situations occur. Cramps, and in children it's a whole variety of other symptoms like the distended belly. But for adults and for baby boomer women, it's very important as our bodies are aging to absorb nutrients, because you start losing enzymes. That's natural. Your body isn't absorbing the food the same way and breaking it down. So a lot of baby boomer women need to take enzymes. Well, even if you're taking your enzymes and you have this disease, if it's not diagnosed, they will not be able to help you really absorb the nutrients if your villi are extremely damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me just say one other thing about this. So we understand that's an autoimmune disease, but you can still have a situation with gluten. You can have an allergy
mm-hmm.
or a sensitivity, which is not an autoimmune disease. But you can have very similar reactions, and it's through the blood test that you'll be able to tell if it's an allergy or an autoimmune disease, if somebody wants to go that route.
Okay.
The golden standard that a lot of the doctors feel the only way to be properly diagnosed would be to have an endoscopy where you have a tube look at the small intestine to see if it's damaged. Well, these days, in the last couple of years, things have been changing, and a lot of doctors still hold to that, and many doctors are now saying you don't need to go put the patient through that. You know, let's just get them off. If they have the positive test, you know, you don't need to. If they have a positive blood test, you don't need to go down there and do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, that endoscopy, that's similar to a colonoscopy, but obviously not the same.
In the other end, going through the mouth, mm-hmm. yes, going through the mouth into the small intestine, and it's a very short procedure.
Okay.
I do know that a lot of people do colonoscopies being mildly sedated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very popular now to do it not being sedated, and the same thing with endoscopy. There's specific doctors that will do it without being sedated. Some patients can handle that. Sounds odd and
mm-hmm.
very unusual. But my husband and I have done colonoscopies not being sedated at all
mm-hmm.
with a doctor in Los Angeles. We did not do the endoscopy that way.
Okay.
I elected not to do the endoscopy.
All right.
Which is checking the small intestine.
Mm-hmm. Now, you gave me some statistics that I put into the material that I sent out telling people about the call tonight, which was information about how many people have celiac disease in the United States, and especially what was horrifying to me when you gave me those numbers was the fact that a large percentage of the people who have the disease don't know they have the disease. So could you talk about that a little bit more in case people didn't catch that in the information that I sent out earlier?
Absolutely. There's approximately 2.5 to 3 million people in the United States with celiac disease. That's a pretty large, that's a substantial amount of people walking around with this disease. But out of that number, approximately, but no more than 150,000 out of this 2.5 million to 3 million have actually been diagnosed.
Oh, that's really frightening to me.
Well, it's the situation that is. It's a fact that needs to be looked at, and that's why mm-hmm. there's so many people who are working so hard, so diligently to to bring more awareness to this topic so that people are not being misdiagnosed. If you have, if you're a woman and you're going through menopause and you've done everything that you possibly can do, and you're having incredible headaches, you're feeling disoriented, the doctor now has done everything possible. He's checked your hormone levels. You're on bioidentical hormones. You're on this. You're on that. You're on a good diet. And you're feeling disoriented. You get dizzy, whatever is going on. And eventually you end up on some other medicine or you get referred to maybe a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
But this test wasn't done. And this has happened to so many people. This test wasn't done. You get the test done and those symptoms dissipate. They're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens. The only cure for celiac disease, handling for celiac disease is to change the diet, is to go off of the culprit, which is something that we'll talk about, which is in wheat, rye, and barley. It's a protein in wheat, rye, and barley called gluten, and it causes these type of effects. And
so,
it's just not right. It's not right for women. I mean, I'm speaking to you because this is the topic. I mean, this is the subject of what you work with, and it's really important. It's very important to me to see women not go through this. You know, if you have 2.5 to 3 million people who have this disease, how many of those are in the boomer age, you know? And
mm-hmm.
it is increasing. It's fourfolded in the last few years in elderly. And when I say elderly, I'm saying 40-year-olds on up.
Okay.
It increases.
So are you thinking that this has something to do with our environment, I'm just mind-boggled. You know, why could it be that so many people are walking around not even aware of having an autoimmune disease? It must be that doctors don't think to test for it, but maybe you can enlighten me on that.
Well, you've really hit the nail on the head here. Is doctors don't think to test of it. They
mm-hmm.
don't think to test because when you go to a university to become a doctor, you learn what you learn. And if that's not in your educational materials, just as you who never heard of it, even in your family until you were in your 20s, maybe your father was never educated on that, and that's what a whole other area of the gluten-free or the celiac community is trying to do, is get this put into the educational systems properly and make some importance on it. I hate to point this out, but a lot of money is made through the drug companies and pharmaceuticals by me, for example. I'm just one individual for 7.5 years. How many blood tests, how many medicines,
mm-hmm.
how many ultrasounds was I put through? And I'm only one individual. Mine was 7 years. The average is 11 years.
Right.
So how much money is benefited? So there's two sides to the coin, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor, if you're in a doctor's office, you have people who come I'm sure you're aware of this, people will come by and they drop off samples. They drop
mm-hmm.
off samples all the time. Well, they're paid by the same industry.
Right.
You know, they're paid by the same industry, but nobody's going to drop off a pamphlet that says from the pharmacies or the drug companies that's going to say, keep this pamphlet, Dr. Smith, in your office because this pamphlet, or actually have a stack of 50 of these in your waiting room because this pamphlet explains celiac disease so that your patients can basically tell you, no, I don't want that medicine. Give me this blood test. And
mm-hmm.
also at the same time, why don't you read this because it's going to inform you, you know.
All right.
So it's a big educational point. It's something that's just missing in the educational system,
mm-hmm.
and it's becoming much more broadly known now. And it's actually not just becoming broadly known through the groups, but it's really becoming broadly known from women
mm-hmm.
who are bloggers and moms, and they're starting up bakeries and they're starting up businesses because mom and women are very instrumental in doing this, you know. In fact, women, I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but women tend to be diagnosed more than men, only really at this point it's proven because they go and ask for it more than the men.
Okay.
You know, they
All
tend
right.
to do that.
Well, we tend to be the caregivers, and also we tend to be the food providers. So
we
so
do.
It seems like, you know, maybe that's what's causing us to be ahead of the men on this right now. But it sounds like what you're saying is that it isn't a situation of gender. It's probably not just that more women have it. It's just that more women have been diagnosed is what you're thinking.
Exactly. Now, you did ask, you know, there's a lot of people walking around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, grains themselves are naturally difficult to digest.
Mm-hmm.
And grains themselves have only been in our diets for about 10,000 years. Now, that seems like a long time for you, for us, right?
Right.
But they did a study years ago of adding grains to two different tribes. And the ones who had, and they had no, they were like us and on our ancestors, having never had grains. We used to live off of fish and
mm-hmm.
what was the law, you know, on land. We didn't know about grains. That came around later that we figured, oh, we can store these grains and then start harvesting. That was
mm-hmm.
years later.
Mm-hmm.
So with these tribes, they did this, and 20 years later, they came back to the tribe that had the grains, and it had enormous effects on their health. And that was the only change in their diet versus the tribe that they did not introduce the grains to.
All right.
So our bodies are not as equipped to break down the gluten that is in these three grains, wheat, rye, and barley.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I was talking with my mother the other day, who's 80, and she's fascinated with the fact that I'm running the NABBW, and I was asking you what I'm doing. So
that's great.
About the calls that I had coming up. And when I mentioned this one, she was saying, well, that she felt that she has difficulty with digesting grains and that she was she's done her own little experiments where she's tried not eating foods that contain gluten. And being as she was a home economics teacher, she knows her foods and she knows what foods have gluten in them. But I would say most people probably aren't that familiar with what foods have gluten in them. So I would have to ask you, what would you say? I don't think that at 80 she probably doesn't have celiac. She probably has that gluten difficulty with digesting it that I think you were mentioning is not the same as the autoimmune disease. But what is the best way to determine if you may have an issue with gluten, what would be your recommendation as opposed to my mother just saying, well, I'm going to take myself off of wheat products?
Well, that's what a lot of people, doctors also, are saying. If you feel like you have an issue, a lot of the doctors are saying, well, take it out of your diet and see how you do. See how you do for 2 weeks. A lot of doctors are saying that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dietitians and a lot of nutritionists are saying that. I mean, if you had a neighbor and they're going to eat fast food every day, you might say to the person, well, try not eating fast food every day
mm-hmm.
for 2 weeks and see how you do. It's sort of logical, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's something simple like that, now as far as your mom, you saying she may or may not have celiac disease, nobody would really know. You can know if she's a carrier by requesting a genetic test. And
mm-hmm.
you can get, you can go online to Entero Lab, E-N-T-E-R-O Lab,
okay.
And they have an amazing way to do genetic tests, and there's also genetic tests through blood, and you can request that through your doctor. There's celiac disease, and then there's gluten sensitivity. Celiac disease is sometimes known as celiac sprue or gluten intolerance, and then you have gluten sensitivity, and it can be a greater or lesser degree, and that's more like a reaction or an allergic reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to get tested, there's something that a lot of doctors who do know about celiac disease are requesting when they send your blood in and they get your blood test done. They're requesting what's called a celiac panel, which means just a number of different tests to be done. But the latest thing that's been discovered is if you're deficient in a certain thing, you're going to get false results on those other tests. So let me tell the listeners here, you really need to ensure your doctors request a test for what's called an IgA deficiency. Because if that deficiency exists, alternate tests will then be used that can help diagnose if you have celiac disease.
Okay.
And you will have false negatives in all your other tests, that panel I'm telling you about,
mm-hmm.
if you're deficient in this IgA. But I do need you to know it's not a black and white area in the testing, and that's the very unfortunate part for celiac disease is there's just a large amount of people who go to get the test and they're negative, so then they go back on the wait, and then 5 years later they get a positive. And why is that? That hasn't been determined yet, unless they just didn't have enough of the antibiotics. But what there's a bit of talk about now is that overall the person was probably deficient in this IgA giving false negatives.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, even if you go to the top, who I work with, the top celiac disease research doctors, mm-hmm. if you're still having difficulty with gluten, whether you're negative or not, and they send you home and they still want to test other, you know, they might find that you have bacteria overgrowth or other things, you mm-hmm. know. But if you still don't feel like you're doing good with gluten, just because you get a negative test, gosh, for God's sakes, just go off of it.
Okay.
You don't have to wait till somebody tells you, you know?
All right.
It's sort of like sugar, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm sorry, go on.
No, that's all right. Some people are pre-diabetic and, you know, in whatever case, sugar is probably not that good for us. So.
Yeah,
but,
like, we have to use our head. And as a woman in the age and the wealth of knowledge that we carry with us, being a boomer, is you take your health and your life and your future in your own hands, and that's really important. You can go to the best of doctors, but still, I personally, and this is a personal opinion, you know, if I always say, you know, if you don't agree, go to get another opinion, or mm-hmm. if you've got something else to bring to the table to offer the person, because you have an intuition about something and it's negated, do you still want to work with that doctor? So, you know, more than anything, take your life in your own hands and really listen to your body, too, and observe.
Right. Now, you've talked about adults being diagnosed later in our boomer years. Are you seeing that happening, that we're diagnosed now as opposed to when we were children, just because there was less knowledge about it when we were younger, or what is... Why are we perhaps becoming more aware of the challenges that this is causing us now than we didn't experience it when we were younger?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. These days, we have tests we didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So first of all, at this point, you and I could have had a test, a genetic test, the day we were born or months later, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And it would have shown if we had carried the gene. If you don't carry the gene, you will never have celiac,
mm-hmm.
period. And it's genetic. It's carried down from somebody in your family, one or more in your family. So one reason that they thought that the hospital, there's a hospital in Sweden working with the Department of Medicine there, and they at first agreed that the figures hadn't really changed just because of improved diagnosis. They thought that maybe it was on the rise due to environmental factors, which at that point is now giving us hope of a prevention, because we haven't had any sight of an actual prevention.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody who I talk quite a bit on my website, Dr. Fasano, he's actually the professor of pediatrics medicine and physiology at the Center for Celiac Research in University of Maryland School of Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually said that if we can understand what helps people lose, or what helps people with this gluten intolerance, it may be a trick to give us more information. So they're still trying to figure out why it is, but he thinks that we're losing our tolerance for the grains.
Okay.
You know, as we're getting older. Okay. Now, if you and I walk down the grocery aisles and you look on your left and you look on your right, every single cracker, every single cake, every single piece of bread, every single breading, every single noodle is made with wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And how many aisles, other than the vegetable and fruit section, can you walk down and guarantee that there's not a trace of wheat, rye, or barley, which is gluten,
mm-hmm.
which has gluten? Now, if you look in your soup aisles, and if you look in your condiment aisles, even in your spices, if you look in your ingredients, you're going to see, if not one of those names that I just said, you're going to see a derivative of one of those.
Mm-hmm.
In soy sauce, it has wheat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to get gluten. You can request gluten-free soy sauce now. So if you and I ate... if you and I every day ate a carrot or drank carrot juice every single day for 20 years, do you think maybe your body would start protesting a little bit?
It might.
Mm-hmm. Well, with wheat, which our bodies were not really, grains which our bodies were not already built in their blueprint to really digest as well, it's already got that point against it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the most prevalent, I mean, it's one of the most prevalent items, and it's like a staple in our food.
Oh, I agree. I've been on a mission now for about a year to eliminate buying anything and eating anything that contains corn syrup. But now I'm thinking, okay, so if I go through my grocery store and I eliminate anything that has corn syrup and anything that has gluten, you're right, I'm ending up with the meat and the vegetables.
Right.
But
you know, the agricultural revolution changed our shopping aisles, changed our way of eating, and changed our way of entertaining and eating.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, eating out, stopping at a fast food, stopping at a nice restaurant, that you don't ingest a certain portion of gluten with every one of those meals.
Mm-hmm. And it's what I'm hearing you say is that it's one of these things like the corn syrup that's hidden in places where you wouldn't necessarily think that it's there. So
it's,
clearly you've become an expert label reader.
Yes, you become, in the celiac community, we call ourselves the detectives. You
mm-hmm.
have to be the detective. If you're a mom with children, I mean, you really become the detective because you have to now deal with school and parties and this and that. Now, for us, here we are, if you're single and you're a boomer, you know, you've got a date, you know, you're sitting there at the restaurant dealing with that. So there's ways which I can talk about how to deal with restaurants and shopping,
mm-hmm.
which makes it easier, you know.
Okay. Well, we should get to that. I was going to ask you a question that maybe could lead into that a little bit, and that is that you work with many gluten-free authors, celiac dietitians, and medical professions who are doing research on celiac disease. So could you share a little bit about this and why you do what it is that you're doing with them? And it sounds like you're doing it for our benefit. Sounds like it's a huge mission.
It's a huge mission. I'm not the only one doing it, and I'm not, and I really need to make this known, I'm not the expert in this field.
Mm-hmm.
I have connected up with incredible experts in people who are on cutting line, just the actual research line. Their research, they're teaming up with other researchers and other MDs, other doctors, other universities, comparing notes, and one of the best, I mean, really, one of the best books out that's, because I've read so many, because I also do the reviews of the books,
mm-hmm.
from cookbooks to authors to moms who have it or sharing real stories to research books.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the best books out is Real Life with Celiac Disease, and I'll tell you why in a moment, but it's a book by Melinda Dennis and Dr. Daniel Leffler. And she's a registered dietitian, and he originally trained with Dr. Peter Green, who is on one of the main research lines for celiac disease. But this is a book that they have teamed up with close to 50 other doctors,
mm-hmm.
and it's so easily written that you and I and our friends can read it and figure things out in their life. And it talks about, okay, if you're having these symptoms, but what if it isn't celiac disease? Maybe it could lead to this. So they give you solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And each chapter concentrates on a specific topic, and as a result of that, they work with a professional in the field on that topic, whether the person is at the university in Australia. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever their main focus is in the field of research. So they have the top-of-the-line information. So the reason I work with people like them, who I've also interviewed both these people on the radio, as well as Dr. Peter Green, as well as Dr. Vicki Peterson, who has a book called The Gluten Effect, which is more for somebody with gluten sensitivity. My whole purpose for connecting up with these people is I'm just trying to help get the word out, because these guys are busy doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not out there. I'm out there. I'm a children's author. I'm out there. I have celiac disease, and I care.
Mm-hmm.
I care so much for women, because I was I went through what I went through.
Well, you know what you went through.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when I went through it, the way I figured it out, Anne, was not through just researching medical books. It was through the plethora of women out there who were sharing their information through either now recipes or whatever. And then I came up with the idea after I was diagnosed, I want to take it a bit further and work with even other teams now.
Mm-hmm.
And I connected up with just wonderful teams. And it's really funny because the Celiac Disease Center, National Foundation for Celiac Awareness, who I write for every month on their newsletter, these groups are run and started by women. And like National Foundation for Celiac Awareness, this is a woman who lost a baby
mm-hmm.
in birth. She was not properly diagnosed with celiac disease. She lost her baby. And she doesn't want anybody to go through that again. And she's making really incredible inroads. We've got certain groups that are doing things to get things properly labeled in all the groceries, making it a law,
mm-hmm.
getting laws passed. You know, it's really kind of fun.
Oh, I bet.
It's wonderful. The group of people are just wonderful. And when you get together, I mean, while we're talking, you and I right now, because we're talking about the subject, it sounds a little serious. And, I mean, it has its serious, you know, its serious note to it. But really, working with these people is nothing but enlightening and fun. Because
oh,
they're just
great.
Brilliant. Yeah. And you're not dealing with anything that really requires, okay, we got to take a pill to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You simply change the diet. Hey, then the next thing is like, oh, wow, you got a good recipe.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of that, what is a typical diet like for a celiac?
Well, we have wonderful, well, the typical diet. Some people, when they first get diagnosed, they think, oh, my gosh, I can't have bread, I can't have crackers, I can't have cookies. So they go a little crazy, and I was one of them. And my shelf became just loaded with cookies and brownies and candies and everything that didn't have gluten.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, going a little crazy. Waffles, you can get the works, you know, and then I started making my own. But
well,
really,
I can imagine that because a couple of years ago I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I kind of went through that same thing of, you know, why me and now what am I going to eat? And so I could certainly understand. And as I shouldn't have interrupted you, let me.
No, tell me.
Right,
tell me. So you had your you had your diabetic candies shelf, right?
Well, I have given up on diabetic candies. Now I just try to eat healthy food. But it was very much of a. There was no one in my family who had ever been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, so it was not something that I anticipated. And I was just leaving for a cruise when the doctor gave me the news, and I'm kind of looking at her and going, okay, now you want me to come back and you want me to, in a month, meet with a dietitian who's going to tell me what I can eat and, you know, how I can change my cooking habits. But I'm about to go on a cruise. You know what it goes on a
yeah.
cruise. There's
yeah.
all this food. And I was, like, panicked because I was thinking, what? I kind of had this feeling like I'm going to drop over dead if I don't know this now before I go on the cruise. And, you know, I was leaving in a couple of days. And so at least the doctor was kind enough to tell me. She said, look, you've been getting along eating what you've been eating now, so just go on the cruise. And when you come back from the cruise, we'll talk about it. But it just so happened it was a cruise that was a conference. And so it was, you know, work and fun at the same time. And I happened to run into one of the people that was also attending the conference who 3 months before had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So he and I got off in a corner, and he really was helpful to calm me down. But I would have to think that the same kind of panic that I went through over what can I possibly eat must happen in a case of a celiac as well.
It completely does, and you really jump into all the treats because we're very fortunate now compared to somebody who was diagnosed 15 years ago because you can go on the Internet and you can buy everything. I buy my noodles. I mean, I work with all these companies. You've got Andy and Dream. You've got spaghetti. You've got, oh, my gosh, Kitchen Table Bakers. You've got the crackers. I can get frozen items delivered to my door. I can get fresh items delivered. But what ends up happening is you do get a little bit more educated and you realize, okay, you start eating these things and you realize it's not hurting your tummy or you're not getting
mm-hmm.
these symptoms. Your rash, that's another thing I need to just quickly jump in here and say is there is a rash called dermatitis herpetiformis. You
mm-hmm.
may not have any symptoms at all, but a rash.
Okay.
And this rash, if they take a biopsy of it, you will be told if you have celiac disease.
All right.
And it will go away with nothing but. That's all my daughter got.
Mm-hmm.
She got the rash. We didn't know what these blisters were. They were all over, and then they would go away, and then all over and go away. And so that was all she had. But that's another symptom I just wanted to throw in here. But what you have to realize is once these symptoms dissipate, you realize, okay, well, now I can absorb nutrients, and I need to, because if you've gone long enough without being diagnosed, you haven't been absorbing nutrients. So now's your chance. You know, the villi have healed up, your tummy's healed up. Start giving yourself better quality food. So a breakfast, lunch, and dinner would be just like any other healthy person, void of that piece of bread or that piece of French toast or going to the pancake house and mm-hmm. getting that. What I do is I bring my own toast already toasted. Our toast can't go in the same toasters.
Okay.
We can have tamales. If you can eat corn that hasn't, the corn has can be guaranteed that it hasn't been cross-contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
You can eat tamales. You can get salads, soups that don't have flour thrown in there. Just really anything. We eat rice. We eat every other grain. We eat quinoa, mm-hmm. buckwheat, teff.
Oatmeal,
it's a fine line, to be honest, Dan.
Okay.
Is you have mills, and mm-hmm. these mills are, there's main mills that are used in the United States and main mills and used in Canada and outside
mm-hmm.
of the United States, and they share their mills.
Mm-hmm.
So if the oats go in one day and the next day here comes the rye, and the next, you know, you get what's called cross-contamination.
Right.
So you have very specific mills that are what are called dedicated gluten-free mills.
Okay.
And if your grains have gone through that, you can be guaranteed, because they also do a test.
Mm-hmm.
And the test has to come in the United States under 20 parts per million. That means 1 million parts, only under 20 of those 1 million parts can be gluten.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it safe for a celiac. So if you take Quaker oats, for example, forget it. It's loaded mm-hmm. with gluten.
Okay. You mentioned having two different toasters. So let me ask you, how do you handle eating and working in your kitchen at home if you have a spouse or family members who are not celiac? I would tend to think that I would put everybody on a celiac diet, but I don't know if that's what you recommend.
Yeah, well, I was the first one diagnosed. I still had three kids at home,
mm-hmm.
and it was new to me. So, I what I did then is not what I necessarily would do now. I made myself comfortable for myself, but I didn't mm-hmm. really – this is what a lot of celiacs will do. They'll do what I did, to be honest,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, you start feeling better, and then you go, oh, you know, I'm feeling better. I'm just going to have a croissant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in Vegas, and that's what I did. I had a bowl of cereal. I had a bowl of oatmeal, and I was like, oh, it doesn't hurt me. You know, that afternoon, I didn't have a croissant. I had a fever,
mm-hmm.
4 days later, and I don't even want to tell you the rest of it, you know. So I kind of lived and learned and realized, you know, I've got celiac disease. I'm not doing this to myself anymore. So what I would do now is different than what I would do, you know, what I did do.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I eventually do have in my West Coast and my East Coast home and in the kitchens,
mm-hmm.
I have a completely dedicated kitchen, both mm-hmm. kitchens. My toasters have nothing, you know, we have the pizza slabs, nothing. They never have touched. If I go into another area and I need, let's say if I'm going to somebody's home, I'll bring my own little things
mm-hmm.
so I don't cause a bother.
Mm-hmm.
And usually friends and people are so much more aware these days. I mean, I don't think I've been to one restaurant. I just came back from a cruise myself, as well as I was out of the country up in Vancouver. And Vancouver and BC and on the cruise and in Los Angeles, out of all the restaurants I go to, which are just too many,
mm-hmm.
I think I've had two restaurants that couldn't accommodate a gluten-free or that didn't have a gluten-free menu. That's how mm-hmm. popular it is now.
Okay, so
and that's due
going
to
out
celiac
to dinner or going to people's homes is pretty easy to manage. You said going to people's homes, you take your own food.
I take something. I make it known. If I'm invited,
mm-hmm.
I kindly ask. I always say, you know, this. I have the situation. If I don't know them, I have a situation, mm-hmm. and I can't. And And if you don't mind, could you tell me what the menu is going to be or what are the hors d'oeuvres or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And I ask them, I always ask, do you mind if I brought, and then there's always accommodating, oh, you know, what can we have to help you?
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't, you know, if it's a genuine, if it's a genuine idea that they're really putting out that they want to help me and I really feel that way, then I'll go with it. If I don't, if I think it's being a bother, I just sort of let it ride and I just stuff my purse, you know. Restaurants, I highly recommend calling ahead of time, looking at the menu, figuring out what it is you like, what you might order that night, and calling up the host and asking the host, do you accommodate gluten-free, do you accommodate a gluten-free menu or do you accommodate gluten-free needs? And lots of times the host will go, yeah. And as most of us celiacs or anybody with an allergy knows, whether even kids, you know, if your parents, you have peanut allergies, you have to be a little bit more strict about it. So you go, you know, can I speak to your chef or your owner?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's when you get down to the nitty-gritty, you know. Very often they'll come on and they'll go, oh, yeah, you know, we can do this and we can change the sauces for you. I get sauces made for me all the time at the restaurants. They just, you know, just, they say, you know, no, we can't, we don't do that. We can't make that without the flour. I go, yes, you can. Just do it without the flour. Believe me, I'll like it. And that's kind of how I do it. As my husband says, I'm kind of like going into the restaurants running my own show.
Mm-hmm.
But I do it not at the table, so it's not kind of bothering people.
Okay.
In a very nice way, too.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Good clues for those of us who need to learn how to do that. Now, I have a few more questions, but I'm also looking at my time here, and I know I'd like to let some of our callers have a chance to ask you some questions, too. So I think what I'm going to do is open the line so that all of our guests can talk and invite anyone who's listening who has a question for you to go ahead and just call out your question then, and Tina will do her best to answer you. The lines are open now.
Are you going to have one at a time come on?
Yes.
Does
someone have a question? Well, while they're thinking about if they have any questions, let me ask you as I
Anybody on the line, just speak up.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes,
I can. What's your name?
My name is Barbara, and I'm in the Los Angeles area.
Hi,
and
I'm here with you.
Yes. I have been diagnosed with celiac, and it was done strictly from the blood test for me, not because I didn't go for the colonoscopy and the small intestines, but because the doctor didn't read the whole order and just did a standard colonoscopy. And then later, when I asked about the small intestine thing, it was, oops, and I didn't want to go back again.
Yeah.
Right.
So I asked my doctor, who had diagnosed me, what would be the difference? You know, I mean, you're saying this is in the blood test, and he said, as you mentioned, I'm
right.
positive you have it because your count is so high. I've
right.
never seen any this high. But the best thing for you to do is just eliminate gluten from your diet for a month and see if you feel better. If you feel better, then regardless of whether or not you have gluten sensitivity or celiac disease, you don't need to be eating gluten.
Right. Well, you had positive antibodies for celiac disease, and you had really high levels, right?
That's what he said.
Yeah. So then that means you are celiac. But well, at this point, I'll tell you why somebody would want to do the endoscopy.
Okay.
Sometimes the damage, sometimes there can be secondary reactions. The most common we have are diabetic, bowel cancer, anemia, and osteoporosis, and you can also have cancer in the small intestine, which is more rare. But one reason they can go in there and take a look, and this is why I'm not doing it, is I don't want to be put to sleep. I don't want to go through that. And they did the same thing with me. I had the colonoscopy, and afterwards it was like, well, why didn't we do that? And it was like, okay. I was like, golly. But, you know, the reason they want to is they want to see how much damage there is. So what they do very often, working more with the celiac centers, is you'll go back a year later and they will check again to see how much healing has occurred, and hopefully all has healed. Because if it hasn't healed, that can answer questions. If the dietitian's working with you and you're having low anemia, or you have, you know, like I said, iron problems or thyroid problems, which also can go with celiac disease. Because it's an autoimmune disease, it starts attacking other areas too.
Yes, yes. And I had many, many of the symptoms. But through the years, many more years than you, misdiagnosed. So
it's not fun, is it?
No, it's not. I had loss of tooth enamel to the point that they had to do root canals and crowns and all that stuff. I had the aching joints. I had the bowel disorders, the stomach problems, the gas problems. I mean, I just had a litany of things that kept being diagnosed incorrectly.
Now that you're on a, for any of the listeners here, now that you were correctly finally diagnosed and you've gone off gluten, can you share, you know, just what happened with you?
Yes, within a very short time. The socially embarrassing aspect of having celiac disappeared, you know. That people were not looking at me funny because I couldn't control the
You didn't have to run to the restroom in the middle of conversation.
Right. And the whole business of either going to the bathroom and having to live there, or occasionally the opposite result, where you couldn't go, all of that leveled out and became normal.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so there, even within the first month, it was pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the things that, unfortunately, if you have it for a very long time and you don't know it, some of the damage, you just can't repair it.
Right, yeah.
You know, you can't have enamel back on your teeth.
Yeah, I have the enamel. It eroded my enamel off my teeth.
Yeah. And some of the damage in terms of the aching joints and the bone damage, some of that can be repaired and alleviated, but it can't be totally repaired. So I've seen gradual improvement, a lot of the symptoms gone completely, and the other things definitely improved.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Oh, that's very important. And what I'd like to mention is if you weren't aware of Tina's website, I would certainly advise you to go and look at it at glutenfreehelp.info, because everything on it is free. There's lots of information there. And Tina, don't you have giveaways from the gluten-free companies that you're working with?
Yeah, every 2 weeks, at least one of the gluten-free companies will offer incredible giveaways, incredible giveaways. I also do not sell anything on my website. It is completely an information website. And one thing I'm very proud to say right now is it is glutenfreehelp.info, which is a .info website, not a .com. And out of every single .info website, I was just informed 2 days ago that my website was a nominee for one of the top .info websites. So it's under some sort of contest right now for the number one.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
And that will only help the celiac community. Yeah, so they chose 10 out of all of them, and I was informed. And I also am offering for any of the listeners, because it's not going to be up for another 4 to 5 weeks, I have a number of free information PDFs that have been compiled. And so I have two free PDFs if anybody wants to email me at info@glutenfreehelp.info, or you can go directly through Ann if you'd want me to send them to you, Ann. Two different checklists. One is just a simple checklist if you've been diagnosed, some things that you can do. And one of them is definitely signs to look for, including some incredible resources to help you in looking for your answers to see if this might be an avenue you might need to pursue for yourself or, you know, a family member,
mm-hmm.
whatever. So there will be many more PDFs coming up. Like I said, they're redoing the whole website. It was so funny. We were redesigning it, and all of a sudden we got this
word that you're getting an award.
Yeah, now we're getting an award, so we have to hold off.
But that's wonderful. That's wonderful that you're going to be honored for the work
you've been doing. Thank you.
Congratulations.
And I welcome anybody who I have a number of people that write for me as well as, you know, all the articles that I do put up. And I write for a number of other publications. But I welcome real life stories. That's something that seems to be what's popular about the website. It's a genuine website, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'm not selling anything, I'm not pitching anything. I will not review if I review a company that I don't think is favorable, I don't necessarily put up something about that. I just like to share what are the good ones. So if it's up there, there are well over 100 companies I've worked with. Become very good friends with them. In fact, I do little small commercials on them, and one of them just was on Martha Stewart's show.
Oh.
Yes. That company is in Canada. It's called No Nuttin. N-O-N-U-T-T-I-N, and they use dedicated gluten-free oats.
Excellent. That's good to know, because I'm a fan of oatmeal, so when you said you got to be careful of your oatmeal, I'm going, okay, I'll have to remember that in case.
Well, they have oatmeal more like treats. If you want gluten-free oatmeal, I work with a lady in Canada again, Cream Hill Estates.
Mm-hmm.
Cream Hill Estates. You can also Google that, Cream Hill Estates gluten-free oats, and she will send them to you personally out of their facility. They're all over in Whole Foods and everything now.
Okay. Any other questions from our listeners?
Speak up now, guys. Anybody else? They're hanging up.
Oh.
They're shy.
Well, let's see.
Do you have any questions for me, Anne?
I guess one last question that I would have is something that you just dealt with a little bit, but that is, how do you know if something is gluten-free and safe when you're shopping?
Well, if you really, 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 really want to know if it's gluten-free and safe, it needs to have a symbol on it, because there's really not a law that we can abide by right now that's been passed that is standard across the boards. That's still being worked on. You'll see a little symbol on it that has a gluten-free symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And that sign is showing that they went through all the testing, that all the products that came into their facility and at the end of their facility, basically it's testing to be pure and under 20 parts per million.
Okay.
And you can read about that symbol on my website as well, because that's a very key part. The only other way to do it is to just, you can't guarantee it's totally safe, and the only other way is to really be a detective. Make your phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I'm trying to find about spelt. Is spelt a variation of wheat or not?
Yes. So don't eat spelt if you have any sensitivity to gluten. It has it has gluten in it.
It does. Okay.
Yes.
And that test you were talking about, what was that, IgA? Is that
the one that you want to tell your doctor about to make sure about the deficiency?
Is that what the IgA is?
If you want to make sure that you're when you get tested, that you test for an IgA deficiency, because if it shows that you have a deficiency, then they'll do alternate tests to see. But the standard test for doing gluten, if you're low on these other things, you're deficient, it won't show that you're celiac.
You want to make sure that you're when you get tested, that you test for an IgA deficiency, because if it shows that you have a deficiency, then they'll do alternate tests to see.
I'm getting feedback. Are you?
Yeah. I heard that feedback all of a sudden. I thought it was somebody talking.
I think it's their computer. Their computer is a little delayed.
Okay.
Oh, that could be the on the.
That was my own voice.
Anne?
Yes.
Hi, it's Laurel.
Hi, Laurel.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you're on the call.
Well, I'm sorry?
I'm so glad that you were able to get on the call.
Yeah. Hi, Tina. It's Laurel. You and I corresponded.
Yes, hi.
Hi. To anybody who's listening, my story, first of all, I have to thank you, Tina, because you're doing a wonderful service and a wonderful job, and this information is so critical for everyone out there. My husband passed away a year and a half ago from celiac disease, and not really because he decided he didn't want to adhere to the diet.
Yeah, I remember
that. And ended up with no villi left, and he could not absorb food. And I guess my message to people who are out there and are thinking, well, I have this, and if all these people are walking around with it and they're undiagnosed, then do I really have to take this seriously? My answer to you is take it seriously. Learn as much as you can from sites like Tina's and the right doctors, because it could be fatal. It doesn't have to be, and it's something you can live with. And I think it's very important, if it's in your family, to make sure. I mean, I really had to urge my children to go for tests, and I have grandchildren, and hopefully they'll be tested. And to be as literate as you can. I mean, gluten is in medicines. Gluten is in everything. You have
vitamins.
You have to learn how to read every single label. And before you get a medicine at the drugstore, make sure your pharmacist knows that you are celiac or gluten intolerant, and have them look at it. And when you go to a restaurant, it's not just a matter of eating gluten-free food. It's a matter of how do they prepare the food, especially if you're in the throes of recovery and you don't have a lot of villi and you're not totally healthy. Because they can make you a gluten-free meal, but they can cook it in a frying pan or cut the meat on a board that had flour on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good point. I really ensure they use a fresh pan. They clean
right.
and scrub, and I have them wash off a grill.
Right.
They wash off any grill.
So
yeah, thank you so much. I'm so glad you called in with this.
So my I guess what I'm saying is, people are walking around undiagnosed, but if you are lucky enough to be diagnosed and know what's wrong, then adhere to the diet. And you're right, Tina, there are so many more things available today to make
mm-hmm.
your life easier. Europe is so far advanced with regard to this disease, and we are so lagging in terms of our doctor's education, and even restaurants in Europe are better than ours. So that's all.
And Australia, where Dr. Mm-hmm. Green is from, you can go.
Yeah.
And you can.
He was the doctor we were trying to get to.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry about that.
But he's a wonderful doctor.
Dr. Green is. Yeah, in Australia, you can go to the grocery store and look in the pizza aisle in the frozen section. And to your right, there's a whole gluten-free pizza option.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it's in Finland. I have to double check. You can go to McDonald's and ask for your gluten-free hamburger bun. Why can't we do that here?
Why?
We have 3 million people walking around with that. You know, let's just, you know, get on the
and
ball.
And I think the issue you brought up way earlier about genetic testing is so important, because it's, I don't think, one of the questions that is asked when they do testing, you know, during pregnancy, and it should be.
Mm-hmm. Right. My one son has very low inflammation now, and when you do these tests, he shows that he carries the gene,
mm-hmm.
but then you can test to find out if he has any inflammation. You can do that through blood and also stool.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to do the endoscopy. He doesn't even want to follow the diet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's 24, what can I say? So
mm-hmm.
he saw his test compared to his brother and sister, which they had very high inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're completely off gluten. That was fine. But he saw where his was, and he saw the secondary characteristics through these certain tests at Entero Lab. He talked with the nurse, and she said, "Buddy, you're going to head right to where your brother and sister are if
right.
you don't start eliminating this, because this is the start. Nothing just happens overnight."
Right.
And he got it, you know. So
well, you're lucky. You're really lucky. My husband wasn't diagnosed till he was in his 50s. And he ate bagels and bread. That was his staple.
Oh.
So, you know, I just think that understanding that, like that nurse said to your son, this is really critical. It's important. It's not a joke.
Well,
if you can have a high quality of life, and
that's
it's
what
the
I
only,
was going to say, if you can be totally cured, or if you can be symptom free and have a high quality life simply by controlling what you eat, then Yeah, exactly. It seems like you should do that.
Yeah,
you're never cured, and but you can live a normal life on the diet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, the cure meaning that it's all gone. Like we have the cold. Your
mm-hmm.
common cold is cured.
Right.
Yeah, we will never
not
be
at
cured.
That point. Right.
Yeah, and one thing, Anne, is as she mentioned, you know, Europe is way ahead here, and as I said, Australia. I do want to make it known that this is the only autoimmune disease in the United States that we get no government funding.
Really?
Everything is all done by volunteer. This is Peter Green's research is all done by volunteer. The Leffler's work, universities. But, you know, you have MS, you have cancer, you have a variety of diseases and autoimmune diseases that have government funding for research and
mm-hmm.
government funding for commercials and awareness, not celiac disease. And that's just not right.
And you're talking about 1 in 133 people have it.
Less than that now.
Hmm.
Closer to 1 in 100. It goes between 100 to 133. So they say the average is 1 in 111, but they even think that it's more now. And that's with celiac disease. There's a greater percentage of that people who have gluten sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or an allergy, I should call it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can call it an allergy for your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's just such important material you two are discussing, and I really appreciate it.
It's quite something. It's just amazing. It's an eye-opener. It's an educational piece. And for any of the listeners, I hope that this has done something to impart some information to help somebody out there.
Mm-hmm. I have another question.
Sure.
When you get, because I recently had an endoscopy because to check for this reflux that they say that I have,
mm-hmm.
And they saw, again, some inflammation. How would I know, does the inflammation for reflux look different from an inflammation caused by celiac disease? If I'm assuming the doctors I went to, because it's a clinic, wouldn't even know to look for something called celiac. I don't even know if they even heard the word. So when they're saying there was like some irritation and inflammation there, you know, how would one know, what does that look like, the difference of inflammation versus a reflux caused from acid and
the acid reflux goes up. It goes up out of the small intestine.
But I mean, when they did the endoscopy, you're saying endoscopy look into the small intestine?
The endoscopy is to look at the villi in the small intestine, that one section in the small intestine.
Because that's where, I mean, because I had the endoscopy and they saw inflammation, so now I'm a little confused. So the inflammation.
Okay, well, you would have to ask them, as far as inflammation, they usually will see that in the area of the villi. And as far as acid reflux, that's going out and going up towards the tummy, going up. And you'll see, they'll see the inflammation there.
So it's in a different place
yes.
than a celiac disease when they're looking
at it. But inflammation is also, you have enzymes attacking the protein. You know, we're getting a little bit too scientific for, I think, the listeners here.
Mm.
But if you call or if you call Dr. Leffler or Peter Green, or even look at Dr. Leffler's book, he will talk about inflammation as well, because inflammation is a whole other topic.
Okay.
Inflammation is the first start of, I mean, these days people are talking about inflammation being the base of what comes after that, which is disease.
Mm-hmm.
Inflammation is, you can call it an irritation, whatever it is, but it's whatever it may be. Even if you hit your hand and it gets red right there, your body's gone and done a whole bunch of work and there's a lot of activity going on there and you see that red mark. It's not just because you hit yourself. It's because there's a lot of, and it's not just because of blood flow. It's just because there's a lot of activity going there to repair and repair and repair.
Right,
so you can
right.
get, you can get in, yeah, so inflammation inside is a little bit similar but a little bit different. And it gets a little bit more scientific, and I think for the listeners, I don't want to get into a lot of that topic right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the best thing for you to do would be to go back to whoever relayed that information to you, your doctor, or if it was the hospital, and get the markers as far as what the inflammation was. If all they did was say they saw it, well, they get what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, all they wanted to do, yeah, they just want, because as you talked about, the whole pharmaceutical industry, all they want to do is to have me take Nexium for the rest of my life, which is not
going to silly.
What's that?
That's silly.
Yeah, you know, we'll get on the Nexium. But, you know, again, like Weston said, let's get to the root of this so I can repair anything. And, you know, am I having sensitive, you know, is there any correlation between, since there's a lot of correlation or not correlation, because now there's the whole buzz disease now is like almost everybody and their mother has reflux. I mean, we never heard this before.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, well, they have undigested food.
Right.
Undigested food, and lots of times people take enzymes, and all of a sudden that reflux is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you, I mean, the natural approach, you know, very often. But again, I'm not a doctor, and there could be other reasons for having acid reflux, which should be looked into, especially being a celiac.
All right.
Now, you're on listserv, celiac listserv, right?
No.
Okay. So
I don't know. I have no idea if I have celiac. I'm just... was interested in the crossing over of all these different autoimmune disorders, and I know that I've been diagnosed with reflux. I don't know if I have gluten sensitivity, so now I'm playing around. That's why I asked about spelt, because I'm trying to eliminate, because, you know, I get some of the symptoms, which, again, is cross symptoms, you know, bloating, which you can have from many different things. So, and you know, when you're saying there's sometimes no symptoms, it's always kind of mind-boggling, because you can have things but have no symptoms. It's sort of
exactly.
Like a paradox. How do you know you have something that looks something if you have no symptoms? I went for the reflux test because I was having specific symptoms.
Right.
And
okay.
A couple of people in my family had reflux, you know, but that, you know, again, you're dealing with, you know, emotional causes as well as dietary.
Right. Well, it's very common as we get older, hitting the boomer age on, men and women to have lack of enzymes. And if you go just do a Google on enzymes and aging, I think you might get some questions answered and find maybe some enzymes maybe you should take a look at and then talk to your doctor about that
I'm looking into that, and then there's a controversy taking the enzymes that have hydrochloric acid. It's like, again,
HCL,
you
can get ones with and without HCL that can do the same, because sometimes HCL burns the stomach lining for some people. It's too harsh. I can't take HCL, but I take other enzymes. And you can learn about pancreatic enzymes. My daughter, when she was having stomach problems after the skin situation, she was prescribed with pancreatic enzymes, high dosages of pancreatic enzymes, and that really helped her tummy. She just would carry those bottles around all the time. And you can buy them now. I think it's called Wobazyme, and you can go to Rain Rock Nutritionals, and they have a very high dosage pancreatic enzymes.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Well, we are past the time, but I don't want to cut anyone off. So are there any other questions that anyone has?
Yeah, thank you, everybody. This has just been wonderful. Any other questions?
Well, if there are no other questions, then, Tina, I'm going to thank you for being my guest today. It's been great talking to you, and it's been a wonderful discussion on celiac disease and why it is so important for us boomers to be aware of it. So I'm going to... thank everybody for joining in on the call, and thank you, Tina, for your time. And make sure that everyone who's listening will please make sure to go to your website at glutenfreehelp.info, and make sure you understand that's at .info, not .com, for more of the wonderful information that Tina's providing for people on this topic.
Yes, and please ask for the free PDFs if you guys would like anything sent to you. Just go to info@glutenfreehelp.info, and I'll send them off to you before we put them up on the website in 4 weeks.
Tina, thank you.
And it's been my pleasure.
Yes,
it's been wonderful. Thanks.
It's been great. Thanks.
Thank
Bye,
you
everyone.
Much.